I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The language we use, especially at work and in business, can often be motivated by what we hear. The lingo we can often come from what seems to be fashionable, or worse, what we're expected to say. A lot of this can preclude the effective communication that needs to happen to get things done and affect effective leadership. A new book gives us a way of looking at how to communicate better. Leading Through Language, Choosing Words That Influence and Inspire, is a recent book from Bart Egnall. He joins me now to talk about the book, why he wrote it, the sort of jargon speak we're encountering, and how to get away from that. Bart Egnall is president and CEO of the Humphrey Group, a global firm that companies around the world have sought to build those skills needed for leadership. Bart has contributed to various publications, including the Huffington Post, the Globe and Mail, and Profit Magazine. The Twitter handle is at THG_Bart, and the website is at thehumphreygroup.com. The book is published by Wiley. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in Toronto today, Bart Egnall. Mr. Egnall, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on to open the kimono.
Thanks for joining us. That's one of those terms that we're encountering a lot that I guess you're trying to stamp out, aren't you?
I would love to. I mean, whether it's opening the kimono or leveraging your core competencies or the ever-popular synergy, it just seems like the business world and really the world of work, even outside the corporate world, is just drowning in jargons. And it's really frustrating.
Yeah, and the other thing that annoys me is the use of acronyms, and they're confusing to a lot of people because, frankly, we don't know what a lot of them mean, and we get these get thrown at us by all sorts of people. Before we get into the substance of the book, I had one of your colleagues on the program not too long ago, last year or so. I guess he works out of the office here in Vancouver for the Humphrey
right,
Group, is that right?
Yeah. That's right, Ram. He runs our Vancouver office.
Yeah, so for people listening to us who might not know what the Humphrey Group is, would you just give us a bit of an overview of what you guys do there?
Sure, and I'll make sure to not use any jargon, but the Coles notes are that we're a company that's been around for over 25 years, and our sole purpose is to help our clients communicate in a way that moves people to act, so to communicate as an act of leadership. And we teach people how to do that practically, authentically, every time they speak. And we offer both private coaching and group training, and mostly in Canada, but we work around the world.
So you don't have to give us specific names, but the sort of companies that have come to you and that you've consulted with are who?
I mean, if you looked at the top 100 companies in Canada, you would be looking at a good percentage of our clients. Companies which have large populations of management, which say, hey, we want to make an investment in our people, are big clients of ours. We've also done quite a bit of work with, you're in Vancouver. I spent 5 years in Vancouver. If you look at some of the top crown corporations and utilities out there, they would also be our clients. So it's real cross-section because we find that it doesn't matter what industry you're in, whether you're in mining, banking, or insurance, the need to bring ideas forward that people listen to and believe in is universal. And it's universal not only across different companies, but around the world. We have a team in Mexico, we have people in the States, and it's just, different cultures, but similar challenges. Everyone around the world needs to be able to speak in a way that's influential.
Yeah, so communication really is at the heart of, everything in life, really.
Mm-hmm.
But in business, why are you seeing sort of, because I mean, you'd think after certain training in whatever field you're in, not to mention the education before that, growing up, we would know how to communicate well.
But, one might hope.
Yeah, one does. But I mean, so what's happened then, and why are you seeing so many problems within the business community amongst the people that you consult with?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I would say it's less a problem and more that the challenges change as you get more senior. So as you said, people, let's say you're an accountant. You go to school for business, and then you go into accounting firm, and you do your chartered accountant designation, and then you spend several years in audit, and you develop real expertise in this profession. And, people in the firm you're working with, this person knows their stuff. He or she works with integrity. Let's promote them. And they're promoted a few times. And then suddenly, they're managing teams of people, and their success stops being about their technical aptitude. It stops being about how well they know the tax code. And it starts being about how they influence their staff to perform well, how they influence clients to choose them over another firm, how they influence partners in the firm's hierarchy to believe in their ideas. And so all that training, all those years of honing that technical expertise is only how they get their foot into the door of management and leadership. And that's when the skill set changes. And that's really where we come in. It's, okay, well, how do you learn those skills and develop them in a way that's authentic and effective?
So two jargons prevalence, because where I see it at its most insidious is when people use it, you know, they're trying to show up whoever they're talking mm-hmm. to. You know, and you know, one would think that they have a good BS meter so they can figure out, you know, what sounds too clever or too cute by mm-hmm. half. So when I hear someone, you know, use a lot of jargon, a lot of, you know, acronyms mm-hmm. and the sort, I just automatically assume that the person's full of it.
Right.
Yeah, and then I just discount whatever they have to say. Right. So do you find that a lot of people are like me in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... So when I went into writing this book, you know, I went in with a view that all jargon is bad, for often for the reasons that you describe. But, you know, people who use too much of it sound like pompous asses.
Yeah.
And I came out generally thinking that jargon is bad, but we do have to acknowledge that there are some uses for it, some valid uses for it. And one is that if you're talking to a group of people who share the same level of technical expertise, jargon saves time. So you can use a term, you know, if you have an accountant talk to another accountant and they say, instead of saying earnings per share, they say EPS. That's quicker. If you have, you know, people in mining who use, you know, terminology, it's not even just acronyms, but cash costs.
Yeah.
You know, people, they know what it means. And so one valid reason to use it is if everyone knows what it means, you save time. The other valid reason to use it is that it creates a shared culture and shared identity. I mean, jargon, so much work now is intellectually based. And so jargon, or technical language, is often a signifier of belonging and expertise. If you're interviewing someone for a position in communications, if you talk about, you know, a key message and they can't relate to that, then that's a signal that they may not have spent time in the industry. And so it creates, you know, it's a way to evaluate expertise and also to create a common community. But those benefits, to your point, are almost always outweighed by the ramifications. And one is that it creates distance between the speaker and the audience. If the audience doesn't get it, it alienates. And sometimes that's because the speaker is just trying to show off. You know, instead of saying use, you can say utilize. Instead of saying make more money, you can say, you know, we can leverage our asset-based or maximize yield on a go-forward basis, you know, sound more impressive. But in other cases, the jargon is actually a reflection of someone who doesn't have anything to say. And so it's not even that they're trying to show off. They just don't know. And so I found a lot of examples of this where people would use jargon as a substitute for clarity.
Mm.
And then even the worse is where sometimes people use jargon to actually hide what they mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no better example of this kind of jargon in my mind than the language that people use when they're firing people.
Yeah.
You know, they don't say, oh, you know, I'm ending your employment. They say, you're being right-sized.
Yeah, no one gets fired anymore, eh?
Yeah, no one gets fired. You're being decruited. You're being graduated.
Yeah.
Or my personal favorite is you've been released to the market. And so, yeah, I know, don't thank me. And so, you know, you look at all this and you say, if our goal in the business is to, like, business, even though it's business, it's ultimately business transaction between people. And it's you hopefully saying to a customer, to a partner, hey, we should work together. You should buy my product. I think there's value. The language shouldn't get in the way of that. It shouldn't conceal it. It should convey those ideas with power and clarity.
So if you're not using jargon to, say, obfuscate or trick people,
mm-hmm.
A more serious ramification of that is how isolating it can be. And the people you sort of leave out. I mean, you know, if you and I start talking about sports or something like that, mm-hmm. and get into the minutia of whatever game was on last night or the statistics, a lot of people listening to us right now would probably not have a grasp of what we're saying.
That's right.
And so do you have a sense of what can be lost in terms of say, benefit to a business if this continues, say?
Well, you have, and you know, it will continue. I think we have to say jargon is here to stay, but the costs are significant. You know, because rarely in business will people put up their hand, or in any organization, put up their hand and say, "What does that mean?"
Yeah.
Because they feel it makes them look out of the know. And so what you get are people who just kind of make it up. You know, and so I remember one company we're working with where the executive had a buzzword to describe their strategy. You know, we're going to be top quintile. Be a top quintile company. Everybody, like, yeah, we're going to top quintile. So I was working with this management team at a retreat, and I said, let's just pause here, because I'm kind of hearing different things when you talk in detail about what this means. Write down your definition of what top quintile means, and then we're going to read them out, and they all have radically different definitions. You know, and here is some multi-billion dollar company, and the people at the top of the company had a fundamentally different view of what the goals they were trying to achieve, how they would spend the money to get there, who they would hire, and they had never realized that.
Yeah.
So there are major ramifications. And that's why, you know, so the first half of the book, I look at those, you know, type of jargon consequences. And the second half, I talk about it doesn't have to be this way, because, you know, people often think language is just something to be, like, just avoid the jargon, just strip it out. But language is also, it's a tremendous tool. I mean, when you think about leadership, my view is that leadership, it has nothing to do with your title. It has nothing to do with how many people report to you. It has nothing to do with your degrees. All that matters is, do people want to follow you? Are they engaged and inspired to achieve something that they wouldn't have until you spoke to them? And so when you think about communication, how it ties to that, it's really about clarity of thinking. Okay, if you want to reach that audience, what do you believe that you want them to hear? And then language is the tool by which that clarity travels to them. And so when you start thinking about language as something that you can use to convey your ideas, you can really start to have a lot of fun with it. You know, you can use rhetoric to bring your ideas to life. You can speak with great conviction. You can be, precise. You can find ways to use metaphors. And so language can be very exciting when you think about it in that way.
And I guess the most prominent examples that we encounter in daily life are political leaders, because, I mean, that's the only way that they can communicate with us is through their speech,
mm-hmm.
and through what they say in public. What are you finding in terms of say, good political leaders, how they use language and at its most effective?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's good use of language to further their political goals, and then there's good leadership in politics, and they're not often linked together.
Unfortunately, yeah.
You know, especially when you look south of the border right now at, you know, what's going on. You know, where Trump is just a master of manipulation and clear, you know, and messaging, though, you know, the messages that he delivers are unpalatable in so many cases. I mean, I think a good example to me of the importance of using the language of leadership, if you go back to the last time Hillary ran against Obama, and Hillary, you know, lost the primaries despite being heavily favored, and her language at the time was very managerial. You know, I've been to Washington, I know how the process works, I know I'm political. And Obama, who had less experience and in many cases less substance behind his messages,
right,
was much more visionary. You know, he talked about hope. He talked about what could be. And people were drawn to that. They were drawn to that vision. And so that to me was a great example of the power of language to create a climate. Obama engaged youth voters so effectively. So that's a great example, Paul, of political messaging and language. In the business world, you know, someone who I think really inspired the world, who's no longer with us, is Steve Jobs.
Mm.
I mean, you know, look at Apple, right? The vision. And when Jobs would present products at his keynotes, it was less a product introduction than almost like a religious revival.
Right.
And part of it was that he is talking about some of the most complex unions of technology and software ever, and yet he used virtually no jargon. You know, he doesn't talk about, you know, the Samsung 32 gig processor and the, you know, iOS 1. When he talks about the iPhone, he stood up, he goes, this is a revolutionary device. You know, it's a phone. It's a music player. It's an internet device. He goes, it's a phone, you know, the music player. And he said again, he goes, do you get me, people? These are not three devices. This is one device, and we're calling it iPhone. And it was just so simple, but it was so clear that the idea mattered and resonated with people who weren't technologists. And so that, to me, is a great, you know, Jobs is a great example of the power of language, you know, the visionary language, the jargon-free, and just the precision. And doing so, he reached so many people with his vision for what computing could be.
So that's an example of say, aspirational, the mm-hmm. aspirational quality of language and how that can move people towards you. So what about the sort of communication that can come out of that can be sort of, well, if it is aspirational, it can also be misleading. And so where do you draw the line in terms of where you're, say, boastful or, unrealistic as opposed to the authenticity mm-hmm. that we seem to really want?
Absolutely. I mean, my second half of the book is divided into 11 chapters on how you can use the language of leadership, one of which is to be visionary, which we've just talked about, but another is to be, and another is to be authentic, and the third is, another one is to be confident. And so when you talk about that balance between confidence and arrogance, it's the precision there that matters. You know, when you decide what level of confidence you have in your mind, you should select language that reflects that. So, for example, if you're, let's say you work in a, you're the coach of your kid's soccer team, right, and your parents say, and one of the children who plays on the team, the parent says to you, how much will my child play this year? You know, if you feel that that child is average at best and isn't going to play a lot, you know, you're not doing anyone any favors to say, I'm going to make this kid a star and they're going to play nonstop if you commit to the program.
Right.
Because everyone's going to end up disappointed. And on the other hand, you know, you're not doing anyone any favors to say, you know, I really don't know, you know, anything could happen. So it's selecting that appropriate level of confidence and being authentic and saying, you know, your child will likely play, you know, 10 out of 10 minutes a game. But my commitment to you is that we will develop his skill so that next year he can increase his minutes. So it's the appropriate level of confidence and being very precise in choosing the words that reflect that.
Yeah. The use of effective communication is not what I got out of this book, is that it's not just for people who are seeking or are in leadership roles. That if you're mm-hmm. mid-level, if you're entry-level, even at whatever firm you're at, there's some great wisdom in here, some great, you know, advice that you give in this book. So mm-hmm. if you are, say, not willing to go up the totem pole or whatever mm-hmm. jargon we can use in that sense, what's the best advice that you give in this book, Leading Through Language, for them?
Yeah, I'd say, no matter what role you are in or aspire to, there are ideas that you have that you want to be heard. I mean, in my 15 years, every person I've ever talked to as a client, they have something that they believe should happen in their organization. And it might be something small, like we need to get our team together to socialize more. Or it might be something big, like we should buy another company and combine them. But everyone has those ideas. And it doesn't matter what title you have. The most influential people in companies it's not tied to their seniority. If you communicate with clarity, people will listen to you, and that will increase the odds of your ideas being heard and you feeling more connected and passionate about the work you do. And so I encourage everyone, no matter what company they're in or organization, they don't have to be in a company, you could be in a volunteer organization. You have ideas that you are passionate about, define them, articulate them, and do so with the language of leadership. And you'll feel good about doing so.
And have you found that the people who communicate effectively at work translate those skills to, say, at home?
You have to ask my spouse. You know, she may no, but in all seriousness, yes. I mean, the challenges of bringing ideas forward confidently, assertively, and with clarity, they kind of, they're life skills, you know, and work is but one form where we use them. You know, if you play in a band, if you play on a sports team, you volunteer, you're a parent, these skills are just fundamental to success in life. And, you know, I believe so strongly that everyone should develop them and will ultimately be more satisfied for doing so.
What have you found in terms of your experience or what you've heard, say, from clients and the sort about when talking to people and people saying what they think you want to hear and how much that happens and how ineffective that is, really? I mean, that happens a lot, doesn't it? I mean, job interviews especially?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a balance, right? Because if you exist in a corporate structure or even government structure, you do not have the license to just say whatever you want. You know, authenticity is not, you know, unvarnished reality.
Yeah.
You know, if you were just to say what's on your mind to people, you would ruin almost every relationship you had. And so we all are in a position where we have to be deliberate about thinking, with this individual, what, you know, how strong a position do I want to take? And the key is, if that crosses to a point where it's disingenuous, then both sides lose. You know, so you do want to be audience-centric. You do want to think about whom you're speaking to and what they're receptive to. But if you ever get to the point where you feel that you're lying or having to say something that doesn't reflect integrity, it's not going to help anyone in the long run. And similarly, or conversely, if you feel that people aren't giving you the unvarnished truth, it's going to cost you in the end because people will just leave eventually. So being able to have those conversations and encourage subordinates to come forward with unpopular views is so important.
Where are you, Bart, on profanity? Because I mean, a lot of people use it, and I mean, it can be effective to a certain extent, I guess.
Yeah, I talk about profanity in my chapter on authenticity and professionalism. Many people have made it part of their professional persona. And they say, you know, this is who I am. I'm giving you this, you know, the unvarnished me. It almost always comes at a cost. It almost always comes at a cost. Someone will almost always be offended by it. That's what I've come to see. And so you've just got to decide if that's a price you're willing to pay. There's a great book I've read and I really enjoy it by a guy named Ben Horowitz out of Silicon Valley. He was he runs a venture capital firm now, but he was a startup CEO. And he's an unabashed swearer.
Uh-huh.
And in his book, he talks about the fact that he swore so much that his company came to him and kind of said, hey, you know, Ben, you really need to stop swearing. And so, you know, I admire his honesty. You know, he writes about it. He says, I thought about it, and I thought, I really can't do that. I really can't. So I made sure I said I wouldn't swear at anyone, but I would swear. And he basically said, you know, it cost him some people.
Yeah.
And so just, you know, make the choice. If it's something that you just can't live without, just recognize that you'll probably pay a price for it.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot in this book that's useful and helpful to a lot of people, Bart. It's been a pleasure speaking to you today on it. Congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. And I love talking about this. And hopefully you can unlock your human capital on a go-forward basis and hit your KPIs.
Yeah, I hope you had a good ROI on this book.
No doubt. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. The book is called Leading Through Language, Choosing Words That Influence and Inspire. It's from Wiley. It's author Bart Eggnall. Join me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.